Hey. Now, no, put down that power drill. I'm sorry, it's not a bird. You know, we've got an interesting challenge today, birds. I need to talk to the humans for a little while here. Can you put down that saw while I do the radio thing? It's getting no respect. Anyway, you know, it's 4th of July weekend. That's kind of a big human holiday, and we're going to see a lot of people, gathering. So, you know, basically what we're going to have to deal with is that mask. You see the masks that the human wear, humans wear, birds? You see that? Yeah, you've seen that. Well, you know, that's the thing. People are going to show up at these gatherings, and we sure hope that they act responsibly. So, I don't know. If you know a human, birds, you might want to tell them, yes, I'm here. And if they're asked, why are you wearing the mask? You say, you know, because, well, a couple of things. I don't want to kill you at the barbecue. And I'm saving a lot of money on lipstick and breath mints. That's right. Whose love? Your love. Jackie Wilson gets us rolling here on a Thursday from Chicago on the Pandemic Pirate Radio Wake Up. Let's get ready and see what's going on today. Show here at 5 after the hour. Here. And, well, we have a mixed bag today. I wouldn't say the news is particularly good. We'll consider ourselves informed, and we'll... we got a couple of things, a new feature that our producer Sparks cooked up, which we're going to call "They Had a Better Year Then." We'll be dipping back to some previous July 2nds, and anyway, we'll have a little bit of distraction with that today. Also, I'll I was not kidding yesterday on the tree that fell on the building here. We have a story. I was dealing with that all that. And yesterday we were talking about the concept of rage quit. I did. Well, yeah. Anyway, so that's about maybe. Let's talk about the world here. United States reported nearly 50,000 new coronavirus cases yesterday. That's the fifth single-day case record in 8 days. As the nation staggers toward a holiday weekend burdened with a pandemic that is only growing worse, this is the New York Times telling you. In the face of cases reaching disheartening new highs, health officials around the country have urged Americans to scale back their holiday plans. Texas reached more than 8,000 new infections. That surpassed its previous daily record set on Tuesday. Arizona added more than 4,700 cases, just under its single-day record set a day earlier. Georgia, there were more than 2,300 new cases. Florida had 6,500 new cases. I'll state the obvious. These were the states that sort of said, hey, let's go. Let's open up. And that's what's going on there. Nearly 6 weeks after Tokyo lifted a coronavirus-related state of emergency, new cases spiked to the highest level since May. It's in Tokyo, Japan, driven by outbreaks in nightlife districts. That's right. to fix the alert here. President Trump said, I'm all for masks. Well, there you go. He's on board now as more Republicans embrace them. Can I make a point? Leadership is doing something first, not doing something last. Thank you, President Trump. Australia thought it had the outbreak under control, then it hit the vulnerable. That's something that we'll get a chance to talk about a little bit. You know, I saw something yesterday, and this is not a visual. I wish I could magically make this appear. I thought this was newsy and worth investigating. I remember when we were first talking about the coronavirus a few months ago, and I think I was talking to Microphone Jones, actually, and I said, geez, I wish we could just see it in the air, you know? Well, there's a thing that I am looking at here. I believe this is, again, I think you can get this New York Times online, but probably all over. Anyway, the idea is that infrared imaging could now be a part of our daily life. In a post-quarantine world, says Jonathan Kessel, heat sensors could help spot sick people with elevated temperatures as they enter public places. But he says it's not that simple. I got to tell you, this is fascinating, though. I thought to myself, geez, if we could only, I know I'm a dreamer, I thought, geez, if we could only see this virus. And I have a feeling that there's something there, so check it out. That's infrared technology. At 9 after the hour here, Simon & Schuster, the book publishing company. We have book news. They can move forward with plans to release a tell-all book by President Trump's niece. I don't know, this guy has so many relatives. Yeah. She wrote a tell-all book on and what happened? A New York appellate judge overturned a temporary restraining order against the publisher. They have it. There's like a department of censorship in that family. The six-page order on Wednesday, that's yesterday, written by Justice Alan T. Scheichman, reversed a lower court decision handed down a day earlier to delay publication. An injunction against author Mary Trump, remains in place. The ruling means that Simon & Schuster can continue with its plans to distribute, get the name of this book, Too Much and Never Enough, How My Family Created the World's Most Dangerous Man, which is scheduled to be released later this month. That's the niece. The president's younger brother, Robert S. Trump, filed the lawsuit against Ms. Trump on Friday in New York there. That six-page order was, I think, a confirmation that there's just a lot of stuff that you're going to see popping up here. This is interesting. If I can find, here we go. One comment by the judge. All right, I think this is going to be, I think this is going to be something that you'll hear a lot. Quote, the legitimate interest in preserving family secrets may be one thing for the family of a real estate developer, no matter how successful, but it's another matter for the family of the President of the United States. So I think you're going to see some more stuff, coming up here. Mary Trump, who knew? Oversees the late action on what has been going over there in Saudi Arabia, has put the American embassy at risk. You'll check on that. Also in Saudi Arabia, I saw this yesterday, Jared, the son-in-law in chief. Someone quoted the crown prince over there as saying that he had Jared in his pocket. New jobs data expected to show gains for June, but the worries continue. Today is going to bring a double dose of data about the coronavirus's pandemic impact on U.S. jobs. Here's an unfortunate twist. Fraudulent jobless claims are slowing relief to people that really need it. Hundreds of millions of dollars went to bogus applications, triggering long reviews for others as scammers hide in a torrent of benefit requests. Wow, could I go off on that stuff? We're going to get to that a little bit. And let me take a second, and I'm going to read you and try to excerpt a little something about why bars have become the danger zone in the COVID-19 era. Am I stating the obvious? All right, but who knows? Maybe you're going to have a conversation with someone over the weekend. Here's what's up. Here's in Michigan, all right? Bars in Michigan opened up in June. A guy named Tony Hild forgot about face masks. Okay. He forgot about social distancing, and he forgot about caution. So he goes up to a place called Harper's Restaurant, which is in East Lansing. That's the capital of Michigan. And that's where Michigan State is. It is. There was a line out the door at Harper's. Inside were 200 people dancing, drinking, and shouting over the music. So Mr. Hild, who's 23, I'm not knocking him. I know a lot of 23-year-olds that are very hip and very sophisticated. I'm not sure this is one of those guys, though. He said, it's just so crowded. This is going against everything I'm told not to do, but he doesn't anyway. This is an important story because what happened is that, as people, flood back to these bars and particularly college town bars and, places where that's kind of what you do. It's all popping up here as these are the spots where people infected each other. In Louisiana, at least 100 coronavirus cases tied to bars in the Tigerland nightlife district. That's in Baton Rouge. Minnesota traced at least 328 cases to bars across the state. And back to Michigan State University in East Lansing, Mr. Hild. So Mr. Hild goes and parties, and then he comes down with a sore throat, chest pains, and fatigue. And by a week later, he had already gone into four other restaurants. And he says, I definitely regret doing it. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Mr. Hild. Governor Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan announced yesterday she was closing indoor seating in bars in parts of the state, including East Lansing. And that's it. What's a bar? A bar is an enclosed environment. There's no ventilation. And the other thing is people are shouting at each other. The spittle is flying out of their mouth. That's why a bar is the breeding ground here. All right, you got it. You got it. And that's kind of what we're dealing with here, is just trying to inform each other. So try to keep that in your heart and in mind. All right. I don't want to drive all the bars in America out of business, but we're going to have to figure this out. I got a story about a guy in Minnesota, a bar owner up there. It's kind of more of the same. We'll get into that a little bit. I'm trying to help you help people that you love here. One headline, Nicholas Kristof, who writes a column, he says, refusing to wear a mask is like driving drunk. I would agree. All right, so that's some of the news here. What can we do? What can we do about all this? One thing we could do, let's get up. You want to? Should we? Give it a shot. Here we go now. Right, we're going to dance, and we're not going to cough on each other, please. The Esquires on the Pandemic Pirate Radio wake-up show here for a Thursday morning, the second day of July. And, well, 18 after the hour. Let me tell a quick one here. I think the moral of this story here is try to kind of keep it together here. I had all my buttons pressed yesterday, and I think it was yesterday we were talking about rage quitting. I didn't even know what that was. It's when you just get PO'd and you know, I'm not going to do it anymore, and you stop, which isn't a good thing if you're in the middle of something that needs to be completed. Anyway, so I actually had a tree fall on the building here. It's a large tree. We live in a three flat. Top of the three flat has a studio in the back, and in the front is a tree that is... Oh, is that Jack and the Beanstalk up there? No, but it's very high. And the other day, as I said, well, it started with a branch falling and then another branch fell. A couple of days ago, the entire tree is now leaning against the building, and one of the branches is about to push itself into the window. I told you I got a note from my neighbor, a nice lady, Beth. She said, Gary, did you know that there's a tree that fell on your building? I said, yes, I did. So, the following story sort of it illustrates kind of what it is now to try to get anything done in this weird era that we're in. And so the following events occurred. I yesterday spent several hours trying to find a tree service. People not there, I'll call you back. And that's all, you know, to be expected. I finally got one guy. Steve, who's a Chicagoan, and he says, yeah, you know, and he's a third, he has like a third generation tree removal company. So I said, oh, sounds good. So, all right, now, not so fast, but the tree is on it's in Chicago. I'll go inside baseball. There's an area between your front yard and the street. So you got front yard, sidewalk, this little patch of grass, and then the street. That little patch of grass in Chicago is called a parkway. And you don't own it. The city owns it, but you sort of have to deal with it and take care of it. Anyway, this tree was in the parkway. So I had to sort of figure out that. We had to consult a number of people. And the other thing is that there are like four cars parked right in front of the building here. And Steve said, you know, I tell you what, when we swing that tree, wham, there goes the automobile. So anyway, we agreed that I would try to, you know, get those new no parking signs that they put up, you know, when something's going on here. Well, and I've done that before because we did a lot of, you know, work on the building here back in the day. Well, not so fast. So I called up 311, and I will not belabor it. I could call them live, and it's great. I mean, they get all the city information, the coronavirus updates, and if you need food, if you're a senior, all that stuff. And then I finally got through and talked to them, and then they said, well, you know, you got to call the alderman's office. All right. Called the alderman's office. They again, I got some guy that wasn't there. His name was Richard, a very nice man, who said, you know, I think we're going to have to do the following. So get this. The city used to come out, and some entity used to come out and put the no parking sign on the tree, right? But not so fast. Now, he said, do you have a way to print something? I said, yeah, I got a printer. He said, well, we will email you the no parking sign. Then you print it and put it on the tree. And I first said, you must be joking. No, no, no. All right, I agreed to that. And then we continued to discuss the wherewithal of all of that. But he said, but hang on. There's no enforcement power. You can put that thing on a tree, but you got to call the cops to tell them what's going on. And I said, yeah, okay. So I called non-emergency police. That's another number. And then I called back, and I'm calling three different people. So finally, I'm told by everybody, the alderman's office actually said, call 911. So my heart was pitter-patter. I pick up the phone, call 911. I'm like, oh, my God. I said, listen, the alderman's office actually told me to call you to tell you that we're trying to remove a tree and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I had a very nice conversation with her. A shout-out to all the people that are out there trying to figure out. And at the end of yesterday, I had not received the email, no parking thing that I'm supposed to stick on the tree, then I have to notify the police that they're going to be out there ticketing cars. That had not come. The tree was not and in a different position. The window hadn't broken. And that's when I just said, I am done with this. And I had a little bit of a rage quit. So, but I'm feeling better now. I think we need a theme song for this next one. This isn't it, but I mean, it sounds like a theme. So the theory of this idea here is that, you know, this year is just, you know, just we sort of like the year to go away and come back as another year. So we have some things that happen on July 2nd throughout history today, and that's why we call this feature, They Had a Better Year Than We Are, or something like that. So on this day in 1776, a scant 2 days before the July 4th thing, New Jersey gave the right to vote to all adults who could show a net worth of 50 pounds. All right? I misread this. I thought they had to weigh 50 pounds. No. New Jersey gave the right to vote to all adults. Yeah, all adults with money who could show a net worth of 50 pounds. We're trying to illustrate this, and Spark came up with a good illustration here. This is cue the orchestra. This is the current area there in New Jersey. Jersey Shore. All right. This is what's going on there now, whether or not you have 50 pounds. Yeah, this is from the Jersey Shore play, Jersey Shore Lobster.
Don't freak me out.
Every single thing that Snooki eats is living at one point, so it just makes me laugh that she's not going to eat lobster because it's living. Doesn't make any sense.
Let's save them.
Me and Jenny decided to save one of the lobsters. So Jenny gets a bowl of water. She brings it into the room. We'll keep it as a pet, and, you know, we'll feed it and save it. I'm not sure what lobsters eat, but I think they eat, like, insects or something.
Yeah.
So I was going to feed them, like, worms.
You grab one side, I grab the other.
Oh no, it's upside down.
He's gonna drown.
They let him water.
What the hell did you do?
We're trying to save it.
You're not gonna save it, Brew.
It goes in salt water, you idiot.
Oh, then take him out.
Something that lives in salt water, you put it in fresh water, it's gonna kill it faster than we were gonna kill it.
We wanna name him Charlie.
Well, Charlie's dead. Charlie's dead. Charlie's freaking dead now.
You know what? Because you put it in salt water. All right, live from the Jersey Shore, many hundreds of years after the that moment when they gave people the right to vote. They might have double-thought that one. All right, on this day in 1843, wow, how about this? An alligator fell out of the sky in Charleston, South Carolina during a thunderstorm. Do we have the alligator? We don't have an alligator falling out of the sky. All right, here's what happened. Sunday a week, I'm going to read this is the way they used to write back in the day. Sunday week was a day terrible for its heat in Charleston. I think Sunday week is a week ago, Sunday. Towards the night, the oppressiveness of the weather was relieved by a thunderstorm of which, and a ludicrous incident connected therewith, the Mercury, that is the newspaper, gives the following account. Are you ready? The thunderstorm of Sunday night, the winding up of one of the most oppressive days ever inflicted on mortal men, was really terrific. The whole firmament growled thunder and lightning. It was blinding to look out, and overhead with a power that shook the solidest of structures. And then, what? St. Paul's Church was struck. With the storm, not seriously injured. But then an alligator fell out of the sky. Right, at the corner of Wentworth and Anson Streets, it rained an alligator about 2 feet long. Come on, really? They didn't lie in the 1840s. He says, we've not been lucky enough to find anyone who saw him come down, but the important fact is that he was there incontestable. Has he gotten there anyway? I think they're saying they had a dead alligator. Is that right? Hey, look at this. Ed, is this? I think that's what they're saying. So an alligator fell out of the sky on this day in 1843. It hasn't happened here yet, but you know what? It's only about 9:30 now in Chicago. Half past the hour if you're not. All right, this is a good one. On this day in 1900, I was reading about this the other day, the Zeppelin took off for the first time in Germany. Did you know? You know Zeppelins, the big blimps? The production of these Zeppelins also had hit the sausage industry. There's a joke there. Gas bags that were used to keep the Zeppelins in the air were made from the intestines of cows. Yeah. Oh. You know what else is made from the intestines of cows? Sausage skins. So Zeppelins were used during World War I, and then so they banned sausages. The Germans were prohibited from eating sausages during World War I, and all the occupied territories had to give up all the cow intestines that they have. And you know what? That's right. There's nothing like a cow intestine to, you know, pique your appetite. I've been thinking about adopting a rescue cow here, but we'll deal with that. All right, on this day in 1937, Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan disappeared flying over the Pacific Ocean. en route to Howland Island. Do you know that one? Yeah, the plane they flew was a Lockheed Model 10E Electra. This is an interesting story if you haven't gotten into it. They never found Amelia Earhart or figured out what happened here. In fact, I'd seen some latter-day photos that she was there or that or the other thing. Anyway, Amelia Earhart, way ahead of her time as a woman who flew airplanes, disappeared on this day in the 1937 year. Now, oh, boy. We're going to have some car sounds. You ready? Let's start it up there. America's first sports car. Get it out of the driveway. Go to the mailbox. Boy, I barely did it. America's first sports car, the Chevrolet Corvette, reached its 1 millionth car produced. The Corvette's a beautiful car. Some men have traded their minivans for Corvettes during the uprise. That is according to our production staff. My producer's grandfather was able to talk her dad out of a sports car when he got married. His reasoning was that now that he has a wife and kids, he needed something that was more efficient with gas. Now, Spark's dad refused at first, and the next day, Grandpa came over with a wad of cash. And Spark's dad sold him his sports car. Grandfather was so ecstatic that he went all out. He greased. Oh, my God. Wait a minute. He did what? He greased his hair with gel. He popped his collar. And he went out for a drive. 2 hours later, Grandma gets a call that he crashed. Oh. That'll happen on the 2nd of July. We're having a better year than we did, huh? That's right. Let's go. All right, get the cow out of the way. That's right. We have business to conduct here. You know what? Let's dance.
Put on your red shoes and dance.
Let's do it. We're going to dance in place. We are going to move around. We're going to do what we can here. It is the Pandemic Pirate morning show for Thursday. This is the second, of course. A couple of short days before the 4th of July here. And 23 before the hour. You know, I was trying to figure out sort of how to reconnect everything that we normally do. I used to do a thing called vicarious vacation when people were, they'd come back. Yeah, where'd you go? Oh, we went to some, oh, how was it? Oh, we had a great time. Yeah, I'm sure you interviewed people and have their thing there. So that was called vicarious vacation. I think we're going to change that to virtual vacation, our new feature here. I'm hoping that we can do something. Tomorrow Hamilton drops. That's the new way that you describe something that is happening. It drops, meaning that the Disney Channel is going to have Hamilton as a pay-per-view. And I'm hoping, I only know one person of all the people that I'm lucky enough to know, I only know one person who saw Hamilton, and I'm going to see if I can get him to review that for us. You know what? I think we need stuff. Better years, I think 1800 rings a bell right now. So we'll do that. I hope tomorrow, and see if we can do something. And other news, Sergi. I don't know what to tell you. I was popping around. We get all kinds of stuff from people to send. They're nice enough to send us stuff, and I got a note. A place in Iceland. And the place in Iceland is a museum. If you have kids, you might want to just something. The word phallus, phallus. Tell them that means something else. This is, I started to look this and I thought, nah, this is shock radio. I don't want to do this. I started listening. They have this is the. Let me see if I can. I read English not so good, Spanish not at all, and Icelandic, I don't think we're going to get very far here. Anyway, this is the Icelandic Phallological Museum. In other words, study of phalluses. I know. So anyway, I was just going to blow this off, and then I popped up to the website, and they have an audio tour. Which is the idea, you know, if you go to a museum these days, you know, you have your listening device and they go through. So anyway, I'm going to play the first part of this about 2.5 minutes. This is the proprietor I'm trying to get this word right because he's going to say it and you're not going to know what it is. The Phallological Museum in Iceland. I throw this out. This is a man. And if you can wait, about 2 minutes into this, he explains that he was collecting all this stuff and then it sort of overflowed his living room and his wife complained. So let's go live to Reykjavik, could we?
Hello and welcome to the Icelandic Phallological Museum. My name is Sigurður Hjartarson and I am the founder and original curator of the Icelandic Phallological Museum. Presented here is a unique collection of hundreds of biological penile specimens, which include the entire Icelandic mammal fauna and scores from abroad. Included are penile artworks from around the world, various trinkets with cultural inclinations, and penis-themed novelties. The penis collection began in 1974 when I worked as a principal in a middle school and my co-workers gave me a bull penis pistol. This became an ongoing joke among the staff, and because many of them had summer jobs at a whaling station, they were able to acquire many large specimens. The family living room got increasingly crowded with amputated phalluses. And finally, my wife told me I couldn't keep the penises at the house anymore. So in 1997, the Icelandic Phallological Museum opened to the public. In 2004, I retired from teaching and moved the museum to the town of Húsavík on the other side of the country. The collection kept growing, and in 2011, the museum received its first human penis. Shortly after I retired from curating, having obtained a penis of every species of the Icelandic mammal fauna, my son Hjörtur took over and moved the museum to Reykjavík and modernized its presentation. Since then, the collection has steadily grown. Let's begin the tour. Above the exhibits, you will often see a drawn image of the corresponding animal species. These images serve to put the exhibits in perspective and also as rough guides on exhibit locations. In front of you, you will see various utensils and items which I carved myself and used in my time as curator. Especially notable are the travel bar and the official gavel, which I tirelessly utilized to hold in line spirited debaters during phallological forums and the council meetings of the Icelandic Institute of Phallology. Now on to the biological exhibits.
Oh my goodness. I can't tell you who this was because I can't pronounce his name, but that's a real thing. And I have so many questions for this man. So why don't you interview him? Ladies and gentlemen, I sent him a note yesterday. It is 5 hours ahead of us in Reykjavík. And I just said, can we chat? I had so many questions. I'm going to have to stop myself. Anyway, that's only one of like five parts of the audio tour. That's the intro. There's a thing about whales. Oh, I know. Bears and seals. Mm-hmm. And a foreign section. I didn't even go there. So anyway, that is the Phallus Museum of Reykjavík, Iceland. He said the living room got crowding. The wife said, you know, maybe can we move this stuff somewhere else? I want to hear about you got a human one. I don't know. I want the story behind that. Did you pay for it?
Surely be learning.
Bunch of great people on that one. That's credit to the Beatles. That's George Harrison's song, While My Guitar Gently Weeps. Who's that playing the guitar in the back? Eric Clapton. It is. So there you go. Oh, wow. We're at 12 before the hour here, the day flying by here, Thursday morning. The Pandemic Pirate Radio Show, the wake-up show, whatever you want to call it. I'll tell you what, the website makes more sense than I do. It's usually bleat.network. And you'll see all kinds of stuff here. In general, things that we do on the radio here, we try to post the interviews, and we're archiving some of the shows. And a lot of the stuff that we get that doesn't lend itself, you know, to, you know, I mean, explaining it, we simply post. So let's see what I got here. California Doug rang in here. M-E-I-D-A-S, Touch, Midas Touch presents He Went to Jared. There is a video that's making the rounds. That's from California Doug. I will confer with Sparks, and we'll post some of this stuff on the website. Yeah. So that is that's some of what's happening. I also want to look at some of the other things in my mailbox here. You don't mind, you? Let's see here. This is kind of interesting. I got a note from, let's see if I can find these folks here. I got a note from Live 365. That is the those are the partners that get the get from where I am to where you are. That's what it takes. So anyway, I thought I'd throw this out. If anybody's in business, here we go. And we spend money with these people. Hello, it says. We are reaching out to you today because you are either currently a Live 365 broadcaster or have tried the platform out in the past, and we are hoping to get some feedback from you. Well, folks, to start with, you want some feedback? You could figure out who I am. You might look at the, you know, customer list. Yeah, your feedback is extremely valuable to us. And we'll help shape what we work on next. You know what? This is not a good time to start spamming people. I don't think you're going to get anywhere. So that was one point that I had. And then I got another thing, and this really peed me off. We have some trademarks here. And trademarking, by the way, I don't know if you know about this. If you're younger than I am, maybe you don't know yet. But you can actually trademark yourself. You do not need a lawyer for that. And interesting, though, people out there won't let you go. So... trademarks are public knowledge, and one of the trademarks that we have is for the company that, you know, owns the radio station here, and that slogan is America's Most Optimistic Company. Yeah, we trademarked that. Well, but I get a thing. I get a thing from some company, I think in Cary, North Carolina, or the hell they are, telling me that it's about to expire and blah, blah, blah. And I looked at this, and you know, if you didn't know what you were looking at, you really would have panicked. So I say to people, you know, this might not be a good time to scam anyone else. Maybe we should reel it in a little bit. And it mostly, I mean, we're so nuts with things. Here I am trying to get the tree removed, figuring out what we're going to do, you know, Iceland, you know, should we move or not? And on top of that we're getting all this junk in the mail. So I throw that out. Be careful about what you send to people. You know what? Everybody's busy and we got, what's the phrase? We play the full nine innings in this league. There will be a time when we're a little bit more empowered than we are now. So make friends now and don't make enemies. So that's my input on people that are saying hello to whom it may concern. I don't think so. It's 7 before the hour. Let's do a quick thing, and I will then hope that you respond if you have time. Again, we've got an 800 number. It's toll-free, I should say, 844-220-3300. I will monitor it every day. I have a feeling that we're going to get some action. Please call us up, 844-220-3300, anytime, 24/7. As you know, we do the we stream the show live in the morning here from Chicago, but you may be listening to me at some other part of the day, and you can always leave a voicemail. It's 844-220-3300, all right? So quick, you know, I'd love to have a thought about this. I know a lot of people that work in bars and go to bars. The last thing I want to do is drive any bars out of business here. But I'm telling you that the action right now in the next couple of days is going to be talking to people who operate bars and saying that, wow, of all the places that you're going to be more likely to communicate with each other, not only communicating thoughts, but also diseases, it's going to be a bar. Dr. Fauci said bars, this is the guy talks oddly. He says, quote, not really good. Congregation in a bar inside is bad news. Congregation in a bar. I think he meant to say congregation inside a bar. Anyway, yeah. The whipsawing rules have incited a backlash from bar owners, saying that bars are being singled out and scapegoated by politicians and on social media as symbols of America's reckless reopening. You know, there's some truth to that, but again, I think it's really going to be hard for anyone in the in elected office right now to look back and say, "Ooh, I did the right thing." I don't get it. I think they have been uninformed. So anyway, my heart really goes out to these bar owners. I hope that we can figure it out. Quick story. This guy is Steve Wegman. He owns the 407 Bar in Moncada, Minnesota. State health officials say they had connected 51 recent cases to his bar, including a bouncer, come on now, who worked there while he was ill. Mr. Wegman said that he had adhered to every new rule and guideline from the state. He blocked off tables. He put up signs telling people to keep 6 feet from one another. Folks, come on. It's a bar. It's not a restaurant. You know, it's not. I mean, his staff members wore masks and gloves and cleaned the bar continually. He says, and I'm not, Steve, wherever you are, Mr. Wegman, I'm not criticizing you. He says, we went above and beyond. He said, what are you supposed to do different from what he did? I think the answer is this is just not the one of the first businesses that you're going to open. Neighborhood bars seem to have a special allure. Of course, that's why they call them bars. They are often smaller and narrower than restaurants. As you know, they have fewer windows, weaker ventilation systems, less space to squeeze by. Pounding music forces people to shout into one another. That's why, that's the one thing I don't care for, I guess, at my age is you know, adding to the rock and roll hearing loss I already have by going into a bar where it's wah, wah, wah. Unlike restaurants where small groups stay at their own tables, I think this is important because it's just not the same. Bar owners, bar patrons linger and mix with one another for hours as drinks dull their caution, including about masks and social distancing. You know what? That's the story. Let's be sane. Please, let's stay alive. Please. Please. All right. We want everybody back here. This livecast was produced in Chicago by Natasha Rodriguez. Have the best day you can.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying how do you do. They're really saying I love you. I hear babies cry, I watch them grow. They're like much more than I ever knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself.